Benvenuti ad Alma Lectio, il podcast dell'Università di Bologna dedicato alle Lectio Magistralis tenute da scienziati, intellettuali e personaggi illustri che nel corso degli anni sono stati invitati dall'Università di Bologna a condividere il loro sapere e contribuire alla divulgazione della conoscenza. Nella puntata di oggi ascoltiamo Louis Ignarro, biochimico statunitense e già premio Nobel per la medicina nel 1998, che ha pronunciato la sua Lectio Magistralis il 19 settembre 2000 nell'aula absidale di Santa Lucia dell'Università di Bologna, in occasione del conferimento della laurea d'onore in medicina e chirurgia. Buon ascolto!
I wish I could talk to you in Italian this afternoon, but unfortunately I forgot this language many years ago, although my parents, as you heard, were both born in Italy. I tried to practice my Italian before I came here, but my mother said I better speak English. I'm going to speak English. But, you know, I can't begin to tell you how gratifying this is. This is such a special honor. It's a great pleasure to accept this honorary doctorate degree from one of the most prestigious of all universities in the world, the University of Bologna. I've always known about this university for many, many, many years, since I was first educated in Columbia University in New York. I had read many stories. One of the reasons I was so pleased to be here and to receive such recognition from this university is because I, too, like to teach. I spend a great deal of my time teaching medical students, teaching graduate students. I spend at least 50% of my time doing this, 50% doing research. So I know what it is to teach students and to take a lot of time to teach students. And this is one reason I feel at home here at the University of Bologna, because of the excellent instructors and teachers here for so many centuries. In the US we would say decades, but here we have to say centuries, and become very successful in what I did. And the reason for that is, I remember in the summers when I was younger, I wanted to go help him with his carpentry. You know, just stay home and study. You can't help me because you can't do a good job. But later, my mother told me to do what he did. He wanted me to go to school, you know, to be a doctor or a lawyer. And so why did my parents buy me a chemistry set? But my mother did not want me to have this because she knew what I was going to do at this. My father said, okay, let's buy him a chemistry set so he can learn some chemistry. And so they did this, and by the time I was 11 years old, I did both. And I just want to very briefly tell you about, you know, three major discoveries we made. I have been awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 1998, and very often people ask me, well, what did you do to deserve the Nobel Prize? And so at first I had to think about it for a while, but I think now I can give you three major discoveries that we made that led to this Nobel Prize. The first one actually started off while I was teaching medical students about nitroglycerin. Not because it's an explosive, but because very useful in treating angina pectoris, of course, to vasodilator. And I was teaching medical students all about nitroglycerin and how it's used clinically and so on, the side effects. And a medical student asked me, Dr. Ignarro, what is the molecular mechanism by which nitroglycerin works? How come it causes vascular smooth muscle relaxation? And I paused for a minute and I said to myself, oh my goodness, I didn't read the entire chapter in the book. You know, I don't know. And I said, well, I'm not sure what it is, but tomorrow I'll read up on it, and tomorrow I'll give you the answer. Well, when tomorrow came, I had to tell the class that the mechanism of action of nitroglycerin is not known. Even though the drug had been used for well over 100 years clinically, the mechanism of action was not known. So I decided as a young pharmacologist to begin to work in this field. And I'm making a very long story short, but what we were able to find is that because it is a nitro drug, that one of those nitro groups can be converted to nitric oxide. And we were able to measure the nitric oxide. And then we did something nobody else did. We studied the pharmacology and the biochemistry of nitric oxide, and we found it was a vasodilator. It inhibited platelet aggregation, it was good in preventing thrombosis or hemostasis, and so we worked out these actions of nitric oxide. So it felt very good that we were able to unravel the mechanism of action of nitroglycerin. And then we decided, well, if our cells, if our blood vessels can respond to such low concentrations of nitroglycerin and nitric oxide, this must mean that we have receptors to react with the nitric oxide or nitroglycerin. But why do we have these receptors for exogenous drugs? I mean, did God know we were going to take these drugs later and therefore gave us receptors? Maybe. That's a possible explanation. But another explanation is that perhaps we have endogenous nitroglycerin or nitric oxide in the body. And so we set out to do experiments to look for this endogenous nitric oxide. But the experiments were not very successful. Luckily for me, we also were working on another project started by Bob Furchtgott, who shared the Nobel Prize with me for his discovery of endothelium-dependent vasorelaxation. And he showed that certain vasodilators like acetylcholine, bradykinin, sometimes histamine, others, produce their relaxation indirectly by causing or stimulating the endothelial cells, the vascular endothelial cells, to make a chemical. He did not know what the chemical was, so he called it endothelium-derived relaxing factor, EDRF. So we were studying this EDRF, and because we were so familiar with the chemical properties of nitric oxide, it soon became obvious to two of my graduate students, and to me, mainly to my graduate students, that EDRF is behaving like nitric oxide. And I said, no, it's impossible. The body cannot make nitric oxide. It would be too poisonous, too unstable. And my graduate students did not listen to me. They continued with the experiments, which was a good thing. And then it became even more convincing that EDRF might be nitric oxide. And eventually we did the key experiments to show that EDRF was in fact nitric oxide. And there were other people also working in the field at this time and published at about the same time similar observations using their own methods. So it was clear that our bodies now, the blood vessels, could make nitric oxide. And so this caused virtually an explosion in the field. The number of publications went in 1986 from, I think, about 30 or 32 papers on nitric oxide all year to, let's say, 1994, the number of publications on nitric oxide was 7,600. So that's a tremendous explosion in this field, and I think it's been fantastic for the cardiovascular field, but it's also been very good for many other related fields. And I don't have time to get into all of these things, but this has turned out to be a very, very exciting field. And this research has led pharmaceutical companies and small biotech companies to develop a number of new drugs. Now, the third discovery actually came a little bit later, and it came in 1990. I'll never forget when one of my friends who was a urologist at UCLA came to me and he said, Lou, what is the neurotransmitter in the nerves that innervate the erectile tissue, the corpus cavernosum in the man? What is the neurotransmitter there? And I said, you're asking me. I'm only a pharmacologist. You are the urologist. Why are you asking me what the neurotransmitter is? He says, well, you know, I can't find it anywhere. I don't think we know. I said, no, impossible. We must know what the neurotransmitter is. So we both looked in all the different books we had, and it became very clear that we had no idea what the neurotransmitter was in those nerves in 1990. So he convinced me to do some experiments, and together we did several experiments. And after a few experiments, we were able to show, again, because of our expertise in nitric oxide, it was very easy to recognize nitric oxide. And so we saw that the neurotransmitter in those nerves was, in fact, nitric oxide. And we published these observations, which turned out to be very, very important, because erectile dysfunction or impotence affects nearly 10% of the male population in the world, and that makes it a very, very prevalent disorder, probably more so than any other disease. And so May was able to develop a drug which I'm sure you all recognize can be developed, and everybody was excited when Viagra came out, especially because it was based on the work that we had done. But there was one person who she was going to tell the neighbors when this news came out. But now I think she's proud. It's okay. But, you know, I can tell you that, as many of you know, and if there's no instant gratification in the research that one does, it takes many, many years, sometimes decades, before one can appreciate the results of your research. And I have been lucky because it did not take decades. It took years instead, which is a lot quicker than decades. But research can be a very frustrating experience. I think one needs a very thick skin to biological research, and you have to stick with it. Never get frustrated, because as I said, there's no instant gratification in the work you do. When I first started to work in this field of nitric oxide, you know, nitric oxide is a pollutant in the air, especially over the air in Los Angeles, I can tell you. And I could not get a research grant to support, and I strongly encourage all of you to do the same thing. You must continue to do something that you believe in. And now, of course, I can sit back and I can relax, and it certainly is very gratifying to see that so many new drugs are being developed because of the work that I played a little role in developing. So, you know, I mean, another bit of philosophy I can give you is that it's so unfortunate that there are so few Nobel laureates. There are so many excellent scientists in the world, so many, but yet there's only a handful of Nobel laureates. And so just because one does not receive the Nobel Prize does not mean that you have been a failure in research. It's just unfortunate that there are so few Nobel Prizes given out. And I think sometimes you have to be lucky and happy also, because many good things have resulted from the Nobel Prize. And one of the clearest examples of something good that has resulted from the Nobel Prize is today. You know, I'm here in Bologna, the sun is shining, and I'm here at one of the most prestigious universities, the University of Bologna, to receive an honorary doctorate degree from this great university. And so those are the best things that have happened to me since receiving the Nobel Prize. And once again, I want to thank you very, very much for your attention, and thank you very, very much.
Avete ascoltato la Lectio Magistralis di Luis Ignarro, tenuta il 19 settembre 2000 nell'Aula Absidale di Santa Lucia, in occasione del conferimento della laurea d'onore in Medicina e Chirurgia dell'Università di Bologna. Vi aspettiamo alla prossima Alma Lectio!